Greetings, comrades, and welcome to Eastern Border. We have had technical difficulties of a weird sort here, but, we did a lot of research today. It was all for naught, apparently. Now we have to do research of a different kind. And today, I'm recording this on Discord with a bunch of my followers and listeners, and Zach and Alex. Say hi, guys. And I hope you
guys.
Hello, yes, everybody.
Zach can speak. We've had issues with getting Zach here because Zach is a great podcaster and a historian. But this is the first time on Discord. We're just trying to get multiple things here.
My last time.
You'll
kidding.
Get used
it's great to be here.
Basically, what happened was that all of today, I thought my initial theory that I presented in my yesterday's episode was totally wrong because I thought I had well-made arguments. I thought it was well-reasoned out, but Prigozhin just kept going and kept going, and things were happening. Planes were crashing, and roads were destroyed. Bridges were built up. People died. There was chaos and uncertainty. Thankfully, I didn't make any predictions today, but and then at the end of it, when we're literally watching like latest news from next about everything happening there, how things are going, people are just getting crazy about this whole coup and everything. And aggressive posts are being made. And Igor Girkin is telling us in a recently released video how Prigozhin has sent his death sentence. You know what happens? Turns out that Lukashenko has apparently been talking to Prigozhin for all day long. And it's kind of like, oh, no, bye. We're just going to go home. We're literally just going to go home. Out of the blue. Nothing was talking about this. And again, we had many theories about what could happen. And I at one point started thinking that my nuke theory might still be right. And I kind of am afraid that it could be, and I hope that we won't see any surprises during this night. But yeah, I do have to give you one of the weirdest episodes of Eastern Border. Well, at least we have Alex and Zach here and a bunch of people, so we're going to answer some questions, I suppose, and give some opinions about what's happening, what happened, how does this impact everything, and what's going to happen next. And to get this thing going, One of the latest news about this whole situation comes from Fyodorov Zdorovogo Chelyveka. It's a channel that is a fan of Maxim Kalashnikov's, and he wrote the following things. Based on the latest news about the agreements reached between Yevgeny Prigozhin and Alexander Lukashenko, the attempt to work out an acceptable way to resolve the situation and the return of Wagner to the field camps, he wants to make several conclusions. One, Wagner Group goes to Africa. Two, Russian statehood has dealt a huge blow. Three, Putin's influence has seriously diminished. In the former Soviet Union, he has become less influential than Lukashenko. Alexander Grigorievich has actually resolved the situation and prevented the civil war. Even if today's events are followed by some kind of respite, steps down the collapse of the system have been taken. We need to prepare for either a repeat of these events or a transformation of the political system. Attempt to tighten the screws will not get us anywhere. Many people have seen the weakness and helplessness of the Russian authorities, including at the international level. So, this is what people say on the far right from Putin. So, Zach, Alex, please, if you have any comments on this, because we've been trying to throw things at a wall and see what sticks for a while, but to me this is kind of the closest thing that I get to any real result.
Yeah. Zach, do you want to go first? Yeah, go.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Just in case I get cut off again from the damn internet. Yeah. Oh, thanks for having me here, guys. It's great to see you all. I'm looking at the chat and things are popping up now. It looks like the criminal case against Prigozhin will be closed from the Kyiv Independent. I have to say, I had an idea today of which way all of this was going. And like most of you, I'd say I was convinced that this was going to lead to something big, obviously big and terrible, but this was a big watershed moment in the war, and I still do think it is. I did not see this coming. I thought he was going to, maybe naively, I thought he was going to try at least to get into Moscow. We saw rumors and partially pieces of news that Putin had left Moscow. We saw news that Lukashenko had left Belarus, and now it looks like Prigozhin's going to go to Belarus. That's just, I mean, I can't offer any more insight than you guys have, but hopefully things will be a bit clearer tomorrow. I mean, knowing the way they hoard information and keep to themselves, it just seems bizarre to me. The whole episode, the last 24 hours, like, has just been crazy. Yes, someone just said in the chat, this reminds me of the coup in Turkey that seemed big and fizzled. I don't think it's a coup to that extent, as in a coup in air quotation marks, because stuff did happen. Like, 7 helicopters, I think it was, were shot down over the course of the day, so...
Yeah, bridges exploded too. Like, but this is the thing. I tried to avoid making any predictions. I know how unpredictable things can be, but usually you get a hint. This was out of the blue. And at least, you know, at least I didn't try to make anything, like, I tried to make everything as logical as possible. But I feel kind of bad for these hyper experts who made their predictions based on unbased Telegram, you know, retweets from war correspondents. At least right. Currently, one thing is for sure, though, which is a question that was needed to be answered. Yes, 26 is still a kind of a day off in Moscow. We've heard rumors that their mobilization will start, but it's still day off. At least that's good. Alex, what do you think?
Well, the one thing I wanted to point out that we were spitballing earlier before Zach got here, we were talking about, and there was a lot of people like talking on Twitter, Telegram, and so forth about how, well, I don't know if it was on Telegram as much, but they were just talking about how this seems like it was a sort of stunt on Prigozhin's part. Like that's the like deepest, the most conspiratorial can get, where he was essentially doing this to get something out of it, some kind of negotiation. I don't know how likely that is. I mean, you know, Christoph, you and I have talked about this before. I think it was on my show where I was saying that I tend to defer to, incompetence above everything else. And I think it's definitely possible, probable, even if I'm to, you know, lean into that bias, that Prigozhin probably did want to march on Moscow, probably did want to try to force Putin to give him something like the wildest one I heard. And I think it was spreading because I saw some other people, relatively high profile people, commenting on this on Twitter, that he wants to get the sort of the confirmation from Putin that he's the heir apparent for when Putin steps down or dies or whatever. And that's the most fun theory I've seen, that this was an attempt at doing that. And that actually would fit in with either this was a bluff or it was serious. Either it was incompetence or it was like a tactical move on Prigozhin's part. It does fit into that. Is there any indication that that's what it was actually going on? We don't know. There's no way to know. Find out, I guess.
The thing is, in the name of all the Baltic journalists, fuck you, Prigozhin. You ruined my fucking Midsummer Fest. I'm sorry. I am angry. He not only has destroyed many things in my life, he literally destroyed a Latvian national holiday. I spent all yesterday doing things. And the thing is here that, if you look at this now, this whole super angry, sword rattling thing, if nothing happens tonight, then this is just hilarious. And if you've watched today Putin's speech where he literally declared, we will use every possible means to destroy like our enemies, and he never said Prigozhin in that speech, by the way. Prigozhin was in the Navalny category for a while. Then it's kind of just, it turns into a farce. Putin's kind of becoming funny. And additional things, by the way, from Peskov, the talking mustache of Putin, quote, today's situation will in no way affect the course of the special military operation. The fight that successfully reflect the counterattack and the operation will continue. And especially, there will be no new address from Putin in the near future, because I think Putin has enough self-awareness to feel a bit shamed about himself now. But Prigozhin says that this will not affect the special military operation or the war. But I would like to say that pulling off a bunch of troops, reorganizing others, creating a whole mess, destroying valuable equipment, I do think it will affect the operation. Like, I see that Ukrainians could be confused at this point, but I'm sure they're going to use this. So what do you guys think?
Just to come in there, I think it said that the deputy prime minister of Russia had sought asylum in Turkey. So if that is true, then it seems like most in Russia thought that Prigozhin was serious. So yeah. I don't think we can call this a stunt. Mm-hmm. I saw above Occam's Razor, probably incompetence, like Occam's Razor, the simplest explanation. But
guys, I have a burning thing that popped up just literally now. Peskov also stated, and we were talking about all sorts of versions. What are the deals? What are the rules? You want to get really stunned. Peskov stated, there is no difference in about the trust of Mr. Putin towards the Minister of Defense. No, Shoigu is staying. Apparently, according to Peskov.
So he's not being
No,
dismissed?
Apparently not.
Okay, so I have a... I'll go ahead, Zach. Sorry.
Welcome to how we feel all day.
Yeah. Well. Okay. So I have a question then. It's a quest statement, I guess we could call it. Because we know that, like Kristaps, you and I have talked about this. You've made this very clear that without Putin, Russia basically falls apart. Putin obviously knows that. Putin obviously, at least in a skewed way, knows his history. So, do you think, in a way, he is in one of the toughest spots imaginable regarding this, because on the one hand, he has his buddy, his quote-unquote chef, turning his private army on Moscow, basically flexing. We can say at the very least that's what Prigozhin was doing. Whether he was actually intending to do something or it was a feint or whatever, it doesn't matter. He was flexing. That's what he was doing. And Putin knows that if he indulges this guy too much, he then loses the Ministry of Defense, because the Ministry of Defense doesn't like Prigozhin. Prigozhin really doesn't like them. And if Putin shows any indication that he's losing the Ministry of Defense, then that increases the likelihood of an actual coup attempt happening from within the Ministry of Defense. Is that possible, do you think?
I think so, but they're preparing for this because despite all this just dissolving into thin air out of nowhere,
sure.
Peskov, I'm just reading the feed where they just post latest things by Peskov. He also just stated that the counter-terrorist operation regime from Moscow, which is there, will be lifted when there are all preconditions for it. Peskov. They're keeping the counter-terrorist operation in Moscow, which basically is martial law, which is interesting.
So, yeah, because that's like in response to Prigozhin, then, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. And then Prigozhin is going to Belarus. You know, I can technically go to Belarus at some point. I could maybe grab an interview with Prigozhin. That'd be cool.
So dope. Be like, and then ask him, why do you want to kill me so bad?
No. My first question would be, кто ты по жизни? Or, dude, what is your suit in prison system? That's the standard question. Of course I have to know.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, like, exactly. What do you think? Like, troop movements and all this stuff? What's your idea? Like, I think you're just confused at this point. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think something needs to be said for the messaging as well. And we're talking about Putin's actual, like, situation and how it's gotten pretty bad now. But I don't want to speak too much for the Russian people, because we know everyone among us, I'd say, wishes that they had kind of done more. But does it not look really atrocious that in the morning you're saying that we're fighting against this this insurgency, these terrorists, and then about like 12 hours later you're like, oh no, never mind, it's fine. Like, I just don't, how can the Russian people like digest that kind of inconsistency? And I'm sure, of course, they're being fed certain lines and everything, and maybe they're just not used to questioning these things, but these kinds of ludicrous events, and I literally called it in my notes a ludicrous series of events, they have the effect of eroding his very regime as much as it hasn't been eroded already. And to the extent that this aids the Ukrainians as well, because yes, this only took 24 hours, but I can't see Putin being the same after this. And in terms of like the armed forces commanding and cohesion, it just doesn't, none of this looks good. And that's why I'm on the side of Occam's razor. The stupidest explanation is the right one, because none of this benefits Putin in any way. And even if Prigozhin's neutered for now, I mean, who knows, he might get some visit or be defenestrated in the near future. But it just, I don't see how any of this has been anything other than basically Prigozhin trying his luck and then backing down at the last minute when he kind of
realized exactly
that he couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Yeah,
the only way how this makes sense to me is, look, and I have to play this out for people who listened to my previous episode. Okay, in my episode, yesterday's episode, I told you that I thought this was all about nuclear posturing and all this stuff, and I have a very weird idea how this whole event can make sense. But it's very unlikely that it happened that way, but at least I can fit it into my theory. I'm not saying it's correct, but at least I can justify it happening to myself. But I'll need proof for that. One is the fact that, yes, the whole event with the special sort of news thing at night, that it was meant for Biden, and Biden noticed, and special services from like CIA and something, like they spoke with Putin's people, and then Prigozhin was just acting all day long, and then finally Biden and Putin made a deal, and they just dropped the Prigozhin makes deal with Lukashenko, and as a side note, to get them out of the picture, make Prigozhin like innocent in return. That would fit into my thing. So, but there would have to be some sort of a sign of a deal between Biden and Putin. Second option that could happen is that he also might, you know, be in a position where to getting out of Dodge, I suppose. But again, I still am a bit afraid of all this nuke stuff, because it really looked serious last night with all the anger and hate and everything. But again, the more I think of it, well, unless something blows up tonight or we get a massive statement from Biden, then I'm just like, you guys got on the drinking binge and you just did the what now?
What a hangover.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's summer. Windows are open.
Accidents happen, you know.
Oh dear.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Just, you know, here's another stupidest explanation. It's the most common one. How many does Prigozhin enjoy drugs?
Well, he can certainly afford drugs. We looked at the stuff that was found. We looked at the stuff that was like in his cupboard because they raided it. And it's like it looked exactly like you would imagine Prigozhin's cupboard would look like. There are guns, tons of cash, 2 gold bars, fake passports. You know,
2 fake passports.
I think he could enjoy drugs as well.
Yeah, and I mean, guess. I'm like being kind of tongue in cheek, of course, but I'm also thinking, well, you know, maybe he was on a cocaine binge. I mean, I'm not being funny when I say that. Like, you know, he has a very high opinion of himself, obviously. Add that to, you know, drug abuse, especially a kind that makes you feel grandiose and great. Anything is going to sound like a good idea at that point. Yeah, I see someone in the chat, white bricks of something or other. There might have been some in there. I mean, I'm just saying that could be a factor that we have to consider, but also that it's purely speculation on my part. I was just trying to
cocaine.
Right. Yeah. I'm just trying to think like sort of root out the possible motivations or driving forces that, you know, are not possible for us to really prove or disprove. So it's kind of pointless in that respect, but yeah, it's always possible that it could be drugs.
Yeah. You see, the thing is right now, dear listeners, right now we're at a point where you've been focusing, learning, reading, fact-checking, doing everything, doing a lot of work. And then at one point when you're like in the middle of it, all of a sudden just, it all goes out of the window and you're like, what? So at this point, like, it would be really funny if Lukashenko would just, you know, tomorrow, because Prigozhin's supposed to go to Belarus, and Prigozhin just wakes up tomorrow and looks at Lukashenko and says, oh, Batka, what the fuck happened, man? Where am I? Yeah. What's going on?
Well, actually, you know what will give us the answer? Like, the fastest answer we could possibly get is if somehow Lukashenko just disappears. That means he was... Or not Lukashenko, sorry, I misspoke. Prigozhin. Yes, sorry, right. Listeners.
He'll just go and live. He'll just go and live a kolkhoz life in Belarus, growing cabbages.
Yeah, that or just go dropping off the face of the earth, if you know what I mean. I'm just saying, right. Like that would kind of answer all the questions in and of itself.
I have a question to Zach though. Zach, please, you are a history PhD now. You are amazing.
You're a real one, unlike the rest of us.
The thing is. Do you know of any other historical things that have been like that? Something similar, and what happened then? Like something that we can actually like, kind of like, we are hoping that you at least have something that we can attach logic to and maybe try to figure this one out.
I mean, like, I'm kind of as stumped as you. I mean, like you all, I was doing my best to fit all this into the grand scheme of different Russian coups. Was this going to be like in 1905? Was it going to be 1917? Was it going to be like, you know, I wasn't expecting this. Like it's kind of, as far as I'm aware, now a history PhD doesn't entitle me to the Pandora's box of all knowledge that has ever come and gone. But
Oh damn! Come on.
Okay, I spilled.
Well,
no,
I'm gonna. Okay, well now I'm gonna have to drop out of grad school. I just got accepted. Jeez, breaking my heart here, Zach.
I mean, like, look at it. Look at it. Just purely based on the facts, this guy with a reasonably sized power base seemed to be going for broke, and then apparently at the last minute pulled back. Like, we can dig into the psychology of why he made that decision, and maybe we'll come up with, I don't know, our own answers. But at the end of the day, it is extremely odd behavior, and it's not something anyone was expecting. So in terms of like historical precedents, you're not gonna find them unless you have a situation like this in other countries in the past where a coup was launched by someone with a reasonably large power base, and then they went for broke like Prigozhin, and then at the last minute backed down. And I think if that did happen in history, we would know more about it. And in that case, I would like to know what happened to that historical Prigozhin and how he fared. Because if it is true that he is going to Belarus, like, does Wagner continue in? And I know they said, oh, it's going to Africa and all that kind of stuff.
Or Africa.
If that is happening, then that means that basically Putin is pushing Prigozhin's power base as far away as he can. And in that case, like, what's to stop Putin from reneging on these promises? Like, Putin's
nothing.
Famously trustworthy. So it seems almost naive on Prigozhin's part to agree to anything like this, unless he didn't have a choice. And maybe that's what we're missing here. Maybe he really didn't feel like he had any other choice than to back down.
Well, Zach, I gotta throw out there that at this point, Putin makes Adolf Hitler, in terms of trustworthiness, look like the myth of George Washington here in the United States.
One thing though, I know something that, you know, I know some things that are like impacted by this. Definitely, we don't know who won because of this. I do not see any profit coming to anyone because of this deal at all. But I can see a lot of downsides, and not just counting the lost people, skilled pilots, planes, and all this stuff. Number one thing, ruble tanked. Economy already not in the best state because of the sanctions. Yeah, not going to help it. Secondly, prices to Turkey like went up 10 times and people bought them. And they're not going to be refunded, obviously. So like a bunch of rich Muscovites who are afraid. I don't really think that's gonna happen.
I like a wisp in chat says Wagner marched to Pyongyang. Yeah, maybe. I mean,
look, at this point, look, if this happened, then one, either like at this, I consider just as likely that Wagner Group declares war on North Korea and just goes there and conquers it, or that there's like a nuke dropped on Belarus to just wipe out Lukashenko and Prigozhin when one go and then whatever.
That would be the wildest scenario if a tactical nuke was launched to wipe those guys off the planet. I mean, at that point though,
yeah, like
I don't want to overstate it, but that's World War III happens.
This is the thing. Do you guys listening to this episode? There are many people out there who's going to be calling themselves super serious mega experts, and some people who are quoting like just nothing else but those Telegram group guys. They'll be trying to make some sense out of this. Mm-hmm. We're not even pretending that we can make some sense out of this. My brain is melting. I have slept 2.5 hours since I did this whole all-nighter looking for reasons, fact-checking, did everything. No, man, I was able to focus on work when this started. Now, when this happened, I'm like, I can just look at some consequences and figure out what some of this could possibly mean.
And I wanted to just, this is just more of a fun aside, because Zach, you were talking about historical precedents, and Christoph, you were talking about that. And honestly, it's not a one-to-one, especially with what happened and with the personalities involved. But the closest thing that this reminds me of is of the guy that Christoph loves to give me shit for, that I'm supposedly related to, Baron Roman von Ungern Sternberg, the Mad Baron of Mongolia. He very similarly kind of did several crazy crusades during the Russian Civil War. Now, he and Prigozhin don't seem to be similar in temperament at all, except perhaps madness. And the thing is, the Mad Baron never turned around. He always just went straight in. He never had a moment where he presumably, this is what Prigozhin did, went, oh, crap, what have I done? Like, he didn't do that. But I'm just saying, like, it sort of falls in line with, like, as soon as, just to give some, you know, clarifying context, Kristaps and I have talked about this multiple times since the war started last year. And you've said it, you know, not even just in our conversations, that you think this is the beginning. This war is the beginning of the dissolution of Russia as we know it, as a territory. And we were kind of talking about this earlier related to Kadyrov and how he would just go full warlord if, like, there was any sign that the state was dissolving. And my first thought was, with this, regardless of the outcome, this is the beginning of a state dissolution in real time that we're watching. And that's probably why it feels so chaotic, is because we're struggling to think of how successful this is, but we should also take a step back and look at the implications of it. It does show that madness or self-interest rules the day.
Okay, wait. Let me just add a thing. There's a new thing from Peskov just as we're recording this. And you'll laugh, of course. All of you will laugh. Mm. Peskov called the word of the president of Russia a guarantee that Prigozhin can go to Belarus.
Wow. Now we can trust it, so.
Oh, I mean, of course, obviously. Yeah. this statement looks like even Peskov is making fun of Putin. I don't know. I just don't know.
Well, I would like to say just briefly, we were talking about him, Putin, being almost less trustworthy than Hitler. There was something very Hitlerian about the actual speech Putin gave when he was talking about the stabbed in the back thing. And I actually thought, when I saw that, I thought he was gearing up for like a, oh, it's not my fault I lost thing. I was stabbed in the back by these disloyal people. And with that, and with Rostov falling so quickly, I kind of thought that, well, maybe this is the end and Putin will try and, I don't know, fight a, yes, stabbed in the back was a World War One thing.
Yeah, but
Hitler,
that's right.
Hitler drew on it extensively. But that's the problem with all of that. It just doesn't answer our questions. We're reduced to looking at these little bits of information. At the end of the day, it could turn out that this is these little things we're trying to analyze don't actually matter in the grand scheme of the war, because the Ukrainians still have to continue their grueling counteroffensive. I cannot see, though, it being the same for Putin after this. And I think, in a way, it's almost odd to me that he would, if it is true that Prigozhin has somehow in any way repaired his relationship with Putin, would you not keep your enemy close unless he wants to just completely, you know, expel him altogether? And now I just see in the chat that Wagner mercenaries will sign contracts with Defense Ministry, courtesy of the Kyiv Independent. So thank you for that, Dunbar, in the chat. The whole way this is carrying on really looks like Prigozhin's having his wings clipped. So
yeah, exactly. That was exactly the same metaphor I was going to use too. It seems
But then why did he agree? What do they have on Prigozhin? Because
if it's not or death.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what if it was, I mean, here's the most extreme thing. What if it is indeed what we were saying earlier? What if Putin or people for Putin just straight up went to Prigozhin and said, we're going to nuke you and your forces if you don't stop this, or something along those lines? I mean, that's the most extreme version. Yeah, I mean, it's the point is, like, yeah, I think the really what they were offering him was, you know, the famous offer you can't refuse.
Well, the thing is, like, we have another question from MaxNerd, I hope. Pitch is right here in the chat. By the way, if you have questions, please type them in the chat, because we're just gonna talk about stuff and trying to make some sense, because I just want to make some sense out of this.
I was gonna say, Julian from History of the Netherlands just posted, what motivates mercenaries? Money. Couldn't have they just paid him shit tons of money stop? That's possible too. Absolutely possible.
Dude, MaxNerd's question was, what if Prigozhin will rule over Belarus instead of Lukashenko?
Oh, yeah.
That actually, seeing that there was this plane with Lukashenko's son going away, ish, maybe?
Like an offer? Like Putin might have offered, sort of like, he would have said, if you stop what you're doing, I'll give you Belarus.
Yeah, because for a while here, we thought that he's going to, you know, oust Shoigu, and that would be a major victory. That was like the point of our one of my previous friends who left, but like, if it's not the case, the precaution has to be like, presuming the precaution would not be instantly killed, maybe he was offered that.
I know this is kind of a silly question because I'm just trying to throw another possibility. So I need to ask you first, Chris Jobs, does Putin personally like Prigozhin? Like, does he consider him a friend?
Not anymore.
Well, that's what I'm saying though. Like, what is this one of those things where like maybe the friendship overrode his pride? And I know that sounds insane, but I'm just saying that that's another possibility that maybe he's saying like, look, I don't want
friendship ended with Prigozhin.
Okay, I figured, but I'm just saying it's a possibility too that it's just a sort of sentimental decision. That's another simple decision.
Okay, we're being told we're 30 minutes. I think we have about 20 minutes more to go. We'd really like to answer your questions here, and I'll ask more to Zach and Alex because you hear me all the time, and I'll be giving you some news if I can get and chime in because that'd be nice. Because for one, we don't do this in Discord often, so. Please, guys, I'm really nice to have all of you here. So please go on. You can also just unmute yourself and talk if you want, or you can just type them in the chat.
Chaos.
Chaos is look, chaos is sometimes. Look, when else are we going to have chaos if not for today?
It would be nicely symbolic of what's going on. Exactly.
That's true. Well, why don't we talk? Redirect the discussion a little bit. Keep the questions coming in, but we could talk about the nuke situation a little bit because one of the things I was really concerned about was, do you remember all those dramatic American TV shows back in the day where a nuke would somehow get into the wrong hands and our hero had to stop them? That kind of seemed like a potential possibility with what would happening in Rostov, because there are nukes being stored. I mean, there's nukes all over Russia, but the possibility that such an important military city and district could come under someone who wasn't necessarily the Russian government did make me a bit concerned. Someone said in the chat there that Prigozhin being motivated by money is horseshit. And I tend to agree because he's got more money than he could ever know really what to do with. I mean, now maybe not as much as he used to have, but I'd say what he's really looking for is power. And if you were looking for get out of jail free card situation, maybe he could leverage possession of those nukes. Now, I know that sounds ludicrous, but no more ludicrous than if I told you 24 hours ago Prigozhin would launch a coup and then cough in the last minute. But I think that when we look at this in the grand scheme of the whole conflict and everything else, I think we're going to have to try and find out, because we'll never know the truth unless we know what was discussed between Prigozhin and Putin. And I think at the end of the day, that's what's going to matter. But yeah, if anyone else wants to comment on the nuke situation, because I was worried I was blowing it out of proportion. And a part of me, I'm ashamed to say, a part of me is kind of relieved that Prigozhin's not running loose, purely because the nuke situation seemed to be a real danger, especially with the situation in the nuclear plant as well in Ukraine. There seemed to be a lot of nuclear footballs in the air, and that was concerning for me.
Well, I have a like my umpteenth dumb question, but and speculation, but what if Prigozhin did get a hold of some nuclear weaponry, and that might be why what his leverage was.
Well, that was I think that my plan would have absolutely been worked. But by the way, interesting thing, I want to remind you something. Because, you know, I am an Eastern European historian after all. Let me remind you of something. When Shamil Basayev of Chechnya took 1,000 children hostage with the condition of withdrawal from Chechnya, he was allowed to withdraw from Chechnya. He desperately hoped it would work 100%. Putin ordered the school to be stormed and 350 children were killed. He basically ordered people to storm school and disregard the children to just get Shamil Basayev out. But when Prigozhin takes some cities with some conditions, Putin went towards random conditions when he was personally in danger. I'm sorry, guy. I'm sorry, Putin fans. This is just not a good look for you.
Yeah, maybe we could address some of the questions here.
Go on. You do you. Go aggressive.
Okay, I'm going to scroll up as much as I can. Motivation with power could be better than money. That's true.
Oh, that is very true, yeah.
I have a thing. They found compelling evidence that he was actually a petuch in prison.
A petuch? Well, remind me what level that is. What
very lowest one.
Oh, he was an untouchable?
Yeah, like if that would be a thing worse than death. If they would have found some proof that would prove that, then that would work.
And I was gonna say, Matt in chat says maybe they found out he was a homosexual and they were gonna release the info. And yeah, Pogrosian, and he knew what would happen if Wagner wouldn't follow him anymore if he would be a petuch. So
okay. But please, Zach, answer something. Yeah, that's a cultural thing.
I like that one.
Okay, there's one by Zaid. Sorry for the name error there. Did Wagner's 25,000 strong force have enough men in the column to have a real chance of success? Just to answer that, no, I don't think it would have, but it was more the fact that he was kind of causing such panic. It was almost the threat of the force itself rather than the actual potential of his force. Because I read somewhere, he's only got something like 5,000 core professionals within that group.
We spoke about this earlier. I think it wasn't the Wagner troops. It rather was the fact that in those cities where they went through, the people were happy and joyful. And, you know, Putin lives on false statistics that 86% people support him. And, you know, everyone thinks it's true because they don't know the real statistics. But then you come out on the street and you find out that everyone in your neighborhood suddenly doesn't like Putin, actually.
Suddenly, what a shock. Yeah, he was becoming a symbol.
Yeah, and that also has to do with the optics element of all this, where like that's really what I think is the biggest harm to Putin at this point is just the bad optics. It's like he can't control his own, well, it's his own private army. I don't know how they speak about it within the country, but it the idea that he doesn't have control over the entire situation is just always going to look bad for him. And I noticed here that new guy, thank you, by the way, for bringing up, for looking into the question that I had, the speculation, Prigozhin acquiring nukes, basically. He says, unless Prigozhin had inside agents, he'd never be able to detonate a nuke because he wouldn't have the launch codes. And that's absolutely true. But I would also imagine those are probably pretty easy to buy if you have Prigozhin level money. But regardless, then he also says something very important here. Give Prigozhin a few weeks and he could construct some dirty bombs by salvaging acquired nuke materials. So I don't know. What if that's what he got a hold of? What if that was, at the very least, what if that's what he was going for?
I mean, well, why would he bother doing that when he could just take over all those Ukrainian biolabs that are making the chemical weapons, supposedly, and use them to his advantage?
I mean, I think, it's as we were saying, we're in speculation mode right here. So, yeah. Do they need codes for tactical nukes? I don't know. I mean, I would assume so. But I don't know. Khrushchev, you've talked about how the nuclear arsenal in Russia is not like someone like me should not be looking at it in the same way I look at it here in the United States. It's a much different situation, right?
Right now, I thought I knew how it works. I no longer can claim this. See, this is the thing that I have been very careful about because I learned from the Kharkiv offensive, right? Mm-hmm. Kharkiv offensive, I was just tweeting stuff and sometimes got things wrong. And that actually, got me followers, but I think I could have done better. So my position in here was like, I only will tweet either memes or something really, really substantial that I can show is true.
Sure. Question, by the way, from George Henry Thomas. Do you know the estimates? Does anyone know the estimates of Prigozhin's wealth? I think that's a good question.
I will check. Please, guys, you can just unmute yourselves and talk or just type questions. I will now check Prigozhin's wealth. Do we have something? I think we might have something in Commerce.
Did have an idea that he had one of the... Not now, his house wasn't as big as Putin's willy-waving house, but I had a feeling he did have a pretty big house of his own. So, he's set for life. He's the famous guy who built himself up as a... originally from a hot dog salesman to all the way where he is now and everything. So it seems, well, I'm happy to keep talking about nukes, but just to cover a few more bases in terms of diplomacy and I think the reactions of different countries today were very interesting, especially the United States trying to do their utmost to be careful with their language so that Putin couldn't say, like, oh, look, see, the CIA are involved in this coup. And look, I already saw people on Twitter saying this, and like without any shred of evidence, despite the fact that Washington was tiptoeing around the whole situation. And you can imagine them just being like, who do we root for here? Like, and,
yeah,
you know, like, I mean, I think we're rooting for Ukraine. So insofar as it helps Ukraine, this is good. But someone actually asked, yeah, would this help Ukraine, in the chat? I saw that question. That's what pushed me onto this in the first place. So it does, it does initially, at least, because I saw news that Ukraine had gotten 3 tanks across the Dnipro. So that to me looked like they had left a few doors open, the Russians had, when they were rushing home to plug gaps in Rostov. So now, will Russia return to focus its full attention on the war, feeling all united and feeling good, or will it return to fight Ukraine feeling demoralized, as if part of its heart has been ripped out? I suppose it really depends on which Russian soldier you talk to, but please keep putting the questions in about that. It really just interested me there about the optics for the optics for the United States being very careful. I think because they are so aware, and we've all seen it, guys. We've all seen the Russian propaganda masquerading as these genius theories online, which suggests that somehow America has all the control in this situation, as if Prigozhin has no agency himself, and as if he's not so much of a dickhead, he'd just do something like this. But we also, I think, sorry, back to the Occam's razor from the beginning, we do forget how dumb these people are. We always talk about how they're 5 steps ahead, playing 5D chess, and they're geniuses, and Putin's a strategic genius, but a lot of it is based on fear, and a lot of it is based on like the gradual accumulation of wealth and power. And you don't necessarily need to be super intelligent or super strategic to build those things up. Like, that's a kind of common misconception, I think, that a lot of us take for granted. We think that because they have these things behind them, they must be a genius, but it's not always true. So yeah, it's just something to chew on, but that's my 2 cents anyway.
Yeah, I think that there's something to that, especially because, what you said is something that, it's another thing Chris Shops and I have talked about, where we were talking about Putin being, it's less about him being intelligent and more about him being crafty. And I think a lot of people think that craftiness equals intelligence, and it just doesn't. It just means that you're really good at navigating a situation socially or otherwise. And I think that is a lot of what's driving a lot of this, that and greed and a desire for personal power. I was going to say, Zach,
I want to plop in because I looked at net worth, and Prigozhin is about $1 billion worth.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Okay, he doesn't need the money. He could buy an island.
He has a 150 meters long yacht and a private jet as well.
150 meters?
115 meters, yes.
Either way. What's the difference? I mean, that's insane. That's insane.
Sail away somewhere, hunker down, and live the rest of
your life. Go away, Prigozhin.
I don't understand these people.
God. Yeah, yeah. It's ridiculous. It's bling, basically, for him. But yeah, I was going to say, though, Zach, I haven't even looked into this, but I guarantee you, based on what you just said about how, my government, the American government, is being cautious or tiptoeing and trying to be very diplomatic in their language, that in and of itself is going to become proof, at least within the so-called dissident intelligentsia of the United States. They're going to say, oh, well, because they were diplomatic, that therefore means the CIA was involved. Never underestimate Americans' willingness to just go out on a limb and say the CIA did it. Like, I know the CIA is nefarious. I don't need to be convinced of that to any fellow Americans listening. I don't need to be convinced of that, but the amount of outsized power and influence they're given is such a meme. It comes from movies. It is not necessarily true all the time. It just happens to be true sometimes. And I don't think people should be spouting off about that shit all the time, but they are, because that's just the way it is. And you know what? At the end of the day, a CIA believed to be like corrupt and so forth is a net positive, because then it makes it more likely that it'll go away one day. But I don't know. That's going to become a narrative. I guarantee you within a week, we're going to be seeing like the quote unquote anti-war leftists and dissident right wingers writing blogs and doing videos on YouTube about how, oh yeah, the CIA, well, like America was definitely involved in this. They absolutely are going to be doing that.
Well, yeah, look at this failed CIA operation.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a Bay of Pigs part two is what they're going to say.
Oh, wow. Well, see, I have a final statement that, like, there is only one way to summarize today. Like, the only clarity that we have today is that Lukashenko, Alexander Lukashenko, is a supreme reptiloid looking down from the planet Nibiru, the main Illuminati and the keeper of the Hermes Trismegistus secrets. And the image of a simple man with a mustache begging money from Putin is just a role. Now we know the true ruler of our heartland.
And just on a side note, new guy notes that it's already begun on Twitter. Blame CIA is trending. So yeah, didn't even take a week. Oh. Didn't even take a week. It took less than 24 fucking hours. Sorry for the language.
Zach, you're a prophet. Prophet, really.
Yeah.
Oh, but okay, guys, okay. I'm sorry.
Okay, we can take a few more questions, and then I think we should wrap this one up. Oh man. It's been rough.
It was
rough
me. I started
today.
The trend. It was me.
you're the one who did.
I look,
guerrilla marketing, Zach.
dear gentlemen, I propose we counter. I propose we counter blame CIA with blame Zach for this.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Blame when diplomacy fails. Don't blame the CIA.
When CIA fails, there we go.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and they do, and that's the other thing too. Is like the people who love to blame the CIA. If you'll just allow me to go off on my countrymen who love to be conspiratorial about the CIA, which I get. Again, I get. They love to bring up how bad they are.
Alex, not now. We have a episode for CIA. We have secret police episode. Podcast for that. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Good point.
They're listening. God.
They are listening. This is true. They probably are.
I wish they were. I mean, I have a Bitcoin wallet now set up in my homepage, and I haven't received my payment yet. Come on.
I mean, I've supposedly been working for the virtue signaling woke mind virus for years, and I haven't seen any money. So
you talk about the 30 years war. Like, what are you talking about?
Oh, there's still a way. I recently did an episode where my friend and I ranted about Brexit and American politics, respectively. Thank you, subtle knife political commissar. I need the protection. But yeah, I released an episode with him and got an awful lot of flack for not presenting both sides. And yeah, just get the fuck out of here. I'm not going to invite someone who defends book banning on my show. Thank you, though.
Well, I have a question, by the way. Well, one thing, though, is like Khodorkovsky. And this is more of a diplomacy thing. Khodorkovsky has been a large player in the opposition, and he played really tough today. He said, you know, he publicly supported Prigozhin, and he was like, honestly, here, he was like, you all guys who criticize me for this, you live on the planet of pink ponies. I'm the old school dinosaur. I'm the tough guy. We should get up. Like, he played tough guy something, and then this happened. I mean, this has to blow the air out of the lungs of so many Russian opposition guys who even had the slightest hope. Like, I don't know.
They could probably just exit the country. Like, that's the issue. They probably have the means to do that, whereas most don't.
Yeah. I mean, I would hope so, for their sake, at least.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Okay, you know what? We have to wrap this one up. And I'll wrap this in a positive note. I'll give you some news, and you do your final statements, please, gentlemen. Because Maxnert says here that we're back from lucid dreams. Finally, normal news. Germany intends to provide Ukraine with 45 more Gepard self-propelled anti-aircraft guns by the end of the year. And that's it for me. That ensures my happiness. Because happiness is mandatory, as you all know.
Indeed.
Well, you're supposed to say something now, guys.
Oh, okay. I don't know if are we wrapping up? Is that what we're doing here?
Yeah, because I've slept for 2.5 hours in two days.
You need to get to sleep. Well, one, I'll just say again, the CIA can't be super incompetent and super nefarious and Machiavellian all at the same time. Okay, this is not how it works. Second of all, we don't really know what's going on. We are just speculating. I think it's good that we're speculating. I like to think about what might be going on in the heads of these would-be warlords and Putin himself. I do think, though, that what this shows is that there are cracks that we knew were there. Obviously, Chris Jobs, you and your listeners all knew that they were there because you've been talking about them for years at this point. But this demonstrates the kind of cracks that you were talking about within the infrastructure of the Russian military machine. And I don't know what that means. It might not mean anything. It sounds like they're reaching some sort of amicability between each other. And I mean, if that means no nuclear war, yay, I guess. But I just, I what this shows though is that this is kind of a shoestring affair, more so than what I think like the 5D chess folks might otherwise assume about Putin. So we'll just have to wait and see where this goes.
Very fair. Just for my last 2 cents, thanks for having me on again, Zach Twombly,
yeah, thanks.
The Diplomacy Fails podcast. It was great to talk to you all. Just as a last word from myself, so my actual PhD looks at national honor, and one of the aspects of national honor is a thing called prestige, which I'm sure we've all heard about before, even though we haven't thought about it that deeply. But in my view, this prestige can be looked at as like a kind of someone's respect for your military power. It's kind of based on a facade in a way. And yes, as you can tell, it's somewhat difficult to define, but whatever way you spin it, this blows a hole in Putin's already seriously declining prestige. And if don't forget, at this stage, he still has to somehow get a favorable settlement from this war, if even that is possible for him. So it's not just the fact that we're talking about, obviously, Prigozhin, because that's the latest news. But in terms of his own ability to get this done, he doesn't have an exit strategy, and he has even less of a hope now than he did before, now that his prestige is even more so in tatters. But yes, that's my last word. Thanks so much for having me on, guys.
Oh, thank you. And I'll go to bed, and I just want to repeat. Damn you, Prigozhin. I could have had a nice little midsummer's national holiday, which is the biggest fest of our year, instead of doing all of... Well, unless something happens during this night. I'll just go to sleep, and I'll wake up in the morning and feel like everyone else who gets nice, nice sleep. Hey, do svidaniya, tovarishi, and thank you all.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. That was fun.